Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Believe it or not, the NBA season starts tonight, usually 4 months between the finals and opening night, but obviously with everything delayed with the pandemic. Last year, it's a quick turnaround for the teams that went deep into the playoffs, namely the Lakers and Miami Heat. So we start tonight, and we have to do what we did last year, the win total draft. And this was an idea by Preston Johnson. He pitched it. I thought it was a great idea. We did it last year with Brian Windhorst, so we had to run it back with the same two fellas. So that's coming up here on the pod. We talked a lot about each of the teams that got drafted. I guess we should explain the format. It's like a fantasy draft, snake draft, and then let's say it's the Lakers over. That means the Lakers are off the board. So it's not like someone still has to pick the Lakers under. It's you pick a team and then you know, depending on your preference or higher draft picks or things you feel more confident of. And then so there's 30 picks coming up with a over or under on each team. And then we all kind of weigh in on each of the picks. For the most part, we talk pretty lengthy about it. So it's a deep dive into the preseason, entering the season. And, you know, the shelf life of the pod is a couple days. So enjoy that. Look, there's a lot of movement, player movement. Remember, we had the bubble last year. So this is going to be a little fun fantasy draft we did with the win total. So with Brian Windhorst and Preston Johnson coming up right now. But before we get into today's episode, I want to tell everyone about a special ESPN podcast. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020, a standalone audio documentary that tells the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans, as told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Go pick me out a winner, Bobby.
Back by popular demand, the masses loved it the first time. Well, we're not really sure, but we wanted to run it back because it was so fun the last time and really good kind of spaces from everyone involved that we had to do it again this year. Brian Windhorst, Preston Johnson back on here. Brian, it's good to talk to you. I know last year's win totals did not get graded, obviously, because the pandemic mixed everything. You know, how are you, man? It's a 2 month off season as opposed to a 4 month typical off season, but it's really, I imagine you haven't broken stride because of free agency.
Yeah, but we haven't gone anywhere. So, you know, typically the playoffs they wear everybody down because of travel, but obviously, you know, the majority of us didn't go to the bubble and the teams in the bubble didn't travel. So certainly I think those back four end teams, those teams that made the final four at a disadvantage, but the rest of the teams have plenty of time off and the teams that didn't make the bubble had the most time off they've ever had. So I don't think fatigue is going to affect most of the league. I think if anything, we've all gotten used to the new normal being a little bit of chaos. Everybody knows that there's no routine to get into, but everybody's kind of operating from the same position. So I feel like there was a lot of activity, despite the short off season, a lot of stuff got moved around. I would say that I think it's been very difficult to judge what the rookies are going to do. And that has made a little bit harder to judge some of these teams because I just don't know what the rookies are going to give. The hand that they have been dealt is really unusual and really hard to predict. So that causes a little bit of uncertainty as you're trying to gauge some of these teams. That said, there was none of these rookies who were expected to come in and make a big splash anyway. So I think we're going to have a lot of parity this year, which is going to make this process, what we're doing, going to be pretty difficult, I actually think.
Well, yeah, that's fun. And I think Preston's mathematical model will certainly weigh in. Preston, what is like not having Vegas Summer League, not having, much of a preseason to base this on?
Oh, that's good, because generally going in with rookies, like this whole point is really fascinating. You would have some data from college that I would incorporate that would kind of have a baseline value and impact number offensively and defensively for that player. And we didn't even get a full college season either, right? We didn't even really get like the big stage values in terms of conference tournaments and then obviously the actual March Madness tournament. And then on top of that, yeah, you would have longer offseason combined with summer league numbers. And generally, I think what would typically be a longer preseason too. I think this was a shortened preseason. So yeah, it is kind of, it's actually kind of helpful that the rookie class wasn't supposed to be too great all in all, just because you're not going to have maybe outside of, I think, LaMelo Ball guys with really super high usage. And even him, you know, with Graham and Rozier there, it's probably not going to be the case, at least not for the first few months, I imagine, there for the Hornets. So, yeah, it's been, I think, okay. Could have been worse as far as making those adjustments. And I think I'll be quicker to make adjustments once the season starts, though, which will probably be necessary just because the early data points will probably be the most significant.
Well, before we get into this draft, I guess my million-dollar question for Brian is, you know, what level of optimism do you have that we will actually get kind of like a full season? Given, I mean, the bubble was amazing, but this is traveling, and I don't want people to, you know, I don't want to be pessimistic, but, you know, the bubble was amazing. We're forgetting kind of like how baseball was, and even the NFL and college has kind of been, I mean, use the word chaos. I want to say, you know, like, look, it's been, we're figuring it out as we go along, but there's definitely, I would imagine, going to be some canceled games.
Yeah, I think there's going to be disruption early on. The first week, this week, is very important to the NBA from a kickoff standpoint, from a drawing eyeball standpoint, frankly, from a revenue standpoint. Christmas Day, I'm just to be honest, I mean, we work for ESPN, but Christmas Day is extraordinarily important to ESPN, you know, getting early, you know, buy-in on their games. So it would not surprise me if we have some rough seas through January. But a couple of things. One, the NBA has left it open that their back of their schedule hasn't been finalized yet. So they've built in the ability to change the calendar to make sure they get these games in. I think you told me that the books are expecting at least 70 games to make these qualified over-under bets. That is a reasonable number, and I'm going to tell you why. Most of these teams' local television deals call for 70 games to hit their number to get their local TV money. And that is one of the big reasons why we had those seeding games in Orlando before the playoffs started. So even if we lose some games in January as this gets going, I do believe the NBA will do its best to get at least 70 for everybody. Secondly, at some point this year, the players are going to be able to get the vaccine. The NBA is extremely cautious about trying to jump the line. But, you know, if you listen to the experts, there's a belief that by March, there's a good chance that it's going to be generally available. And I expect that the players, the NBA players, may be able to get their hands on some of it a little bit earlier than that. So the playoffs and back half of the season, I think, potentially could be protected by the vaccine. And then here's something that nobody's going to talk about, but is just the truth. There's a lot of NBA players who have had the virus. In talking to agents and trainers, I've heard people say between 30 and 40%. And certainly, you know, I'm not an expert. I don't know how antibodies 100% with this work. Nobody does. But there are players who feel like they may be protected a little bit because they've had it. So the concept of a whole team being shut down, this is also very important. From what I understand, the contact tracing, the league is not intending to be aggressive with it. Now, whether or not that's a mistake, we'll see, but it's not going to, I think, be like it was with baseball where they shut down a whole team because one player gets sick. I think they believe so much in their testing that we're going to have games. But I will tell you that I am unsure about how fast the NBA is going to report positive tests. And I would advise holding bets till the very last second till you know who is in that starting lineup every night.
Well, that's something, Preston, we've discussed a ton with football, right? And it sounds like talking to odds makers and bookmakers in terms of the masses, a lot of their sharp college plays, the respected money, doesn't really come in till the weekend. And because of so many moving parts, but they feel like the NFL like has got it pretty on lockdown. And if a game moves, a game moves. But the college was sort of the more unpredictable component. So how are you kind of approaching that component to things?
Yeah, that's one thing I've done differently even in college and NFL is I just decided to wait longer because it was a little hectic, especially the NFL 5 or 6 weeks ago. You know, COVID started becoming a little more rampant through a few teams. The Baltimore Ravens were an example. And waiting is just you're a lot more comfortable when you're able to find out who's actually playing and not before you're placing a bet. And so I imagine it'll be the same thing with the NBA. And, generally you want to bet into, more inefficient markets, maybe the night before or early in the morning. Maybe it's worth now waiting until 30 minutes or an hour before, where generally you would expect the markets to be more efficient, bigger limits, more people have bet into them. But if everyone's waiting, it's not like you're going to be that far behind. And if there's people that are resting within the two teams that are playing each other or the people that are out, you have to make those adjustments and then just kind of tackle it on the fly. So it'll be a learning experience too, I think, these first few weeks as everything kind of unfolds.
Yeah, unlike the football, both college and pro, we have this load management variable in the NBA that has really taken a new shape the last handful of years. So already that was sort of in the back of everyone's minds who likes to bet this stuff, as Preston alluded to, overnight and in the morning, just because getting the key or getting numbers is so key to this whole rat race and operation. But it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. Brian, you brought up some wonderful points, and it's good to file those away. And the fact that the second half of the season's not carved out or whatever is really a giant level to this. So I'm fired up, and I guess now would be the time that we get going and unveil this new the new draft, the second coming of it. We worked out the kinks, no Zoom calls like the NBA did with the NFL draft and NBA draft for that matter. Brian, Preston was texting me. He's like, pick a number, and we figured it out. So you're first. Congratulations on the big honor of the first draft. So it's important to get that first pick.
All right, I'll screw up right out of the
nobody game. Nobody trading yet. So I think you're on the clock here.
All right. Well, I am going to take the Warriors under on 37.5 as my number one pick. I am very bearish on this Warriors team. Draymond Green is already hurt. I do not believe in their supporting cast. The design of their team is completely different from the way they used to play with Curry, because they always had such tremendous outside shooting. They are not going to have that with this team. The guys they're relying on outside of Curry are not good outside shooters. And I don't believe that James Wiseman is going to make a material impact on winning and losing early in the season. He may have moments, but he is going to be so raw defensively, I think they're going to have a difficult time playing him. And I'm also computing that Steph Curry is going to miss some games. He has obviously been terrific in the preseason. I do not think that this Warriors team is a playoff team, not because I think that they're not going to have some wins. I just think that the West is going to be so tough. And, one of their great advantages has always been their home court. They're not going to have much of a home court advantage. So I am under on the Warriors. I am under on them making the playoffs.
Well, maybe I should have done the redraft, because I would have liked to have gone first, because that was going to be my top pick.
Really?
It's funny. I usually lean on Brian, sometimes blow up his phone too much when I need to get some just background, things like that, that he's basically already shared here in the pod. But I didn't talk to you at all about this Warriors team, and you basically said everything I've said. We had to do some tapings for SportsCenter, and that was basically, in a nutshell, what I said. One thing I did say that you did not, I'm curious to get. I also think, like, the special nature of the Warriors' offense, when they burst onto the scene and won the title in Kerr's first year, was so different than what other we had seen in the NBA. They kind of took a giant step, revolutionizing the offense and the three-pointers. But some of that has almost spread around the league. And the Warriors took such advantage of facing teams on a nightly basis in the regular season that weren't used to facing this. It was such a shock to their system. Whereas now everyone's shooting three. Some of their offensive concepts are shared by other teams.
Like the Chip Kelly effect.
Yeah. And also not having Klay Thompson, right? Like, so I agree with, there's a little bit of too much excitement and talking themselves into, like, well, maybe it's not that bad because Kelly Oubre is there and James Wiseman's really good and he's a top pick. It's like, this is kind of, it feels like forced excitement around those guys. And then also just the shock value is no longer there with the Warriors, especially when you only have one of the Splash Brothers. Is that something at all you've heard around the league?
I just think when you look at their style of play, which was a very big read and react offense. They don't run plays. And it's one thing to run a read and react offense when you've got Klay, Iguodala, Durant, Draymond out there all running it together. Even a guy like Sean Livingston, they don't have the read and react players. They're relying on Oubre and Wiggins to really play special roles. And I just don't see them doing that. The other thing I'm going to say is, I just think the competition in the league is very tough. Even when you, we'll talk about this throughout this discussion. I just think, you know, even as you go out and look at the East teams, there's going to be a lot of East teams that are going to pound the Warriors. It's not like it was in the past where the West is going to, in my view, I mean, I could be wrong, where the West is going to feast up on the East. And so I just think 37 and a half is too high. I do not think they'll be in the playoffs. I think they will. I think if they make the play-in tournament, which is top 10, I think they will have done a good job, give themselves a puncher's chance.
Preston, you reacted. I mean, I think we can talk a little bit more about some of these top picks. We reacted. You reacted like you were surprised. Like, how is your outlook on the Warriors?
It's pretty much on market now. What's tough to project out is, I guess, you know, how many games Steph misses for starters, how many games Draymond misses. He's most likely going to miss this first one, at least against Brooklyn. And so maybe Brian is more in tune to how significant the injury is. But yeah, if Draymond's going to miss like a month or two, then that changes quite a bit. If he's only going to miss the Brooklyn game, maybe one more, and then he's good to go. Then I have 37-ish fair. So it's probably, and a lot of these are going to be dependent on injuries. But when you're already kind of tiptoeing that line of delicacy like Golden State is now, where one more guy, because of what's happened to Clay now already, if one of those two are out for any period of time, then this is probably going to be an under. So I would lean your guys' way regardless. But yeah, I guess it's a good point though, just about Draymond already kind of being banged up, and he's going to be the guy when you're trying to bring in Weissman or even Looney, you know, that's basically the linebacker of the defense. And if he's not playing, it's going to be tough for all these other guys to find their role.
And there's another variable, but I'm going to bring it up with other teams. So I'll go second now. There's a team I really like, but I only got tipped off to it because of Preston, so I won't be dirty and sneak it. I'd steal it. So I'll go with – well, I joked about it with Matthew Berry once. I'm like, how do you compete in these high money leagues when you, like, guys do, like, a marathon and all your stuff's out there with, like, podcast? He's like, it's terrible. He's like, a lot of these guys just steal my info. Now – I like to aggregate. That would be, so one of the picks I would expect you to make next is going to be one of my favorite ones, but I'm going to go with the Mavericks over. And that's something we've all kind of been on. And it just speaks to, so when there's an unknown with the COVID and we don't know if how many guys are going to miss games, stuff like that, if you're going to take an over at all, I think it's got to do with like a really deep team and a really good coach. And that's what I feel comfortable with Carlisle, who's just fantastic. And Luka Doncic, widely, you know, obviously he's the betting favorite to win the MVP, widely expected to take a giant step forward. And when he's young, I don't expect load management and things like that. Porzingis will be a variable, but I just love this team and what they do, and they're going to play hard and all that good stuff. So I'm looking it up right now. So somehow it's like not in front of me. Oh, there it is, the bottom, 43. At 43, I just feel, you know, 37's 500 ball, and or 36, I should say. And I just feel like that's a good play for me, and I'm going to go over there with Mavs.
Yeah, I mean, that was one I would have picked probably my third or fourth best play on the board. So I'm absolutely with you. And a lot of it just has to do with some of the underlying numbers from last season. You know, they were the biggest discrepancy in the entire league based on their Pythagorean win expectancy, which is, you know, how many points did you score over the course of the season? How many did you allow? They performed last season like a 50-win team. And that was in a limited season, right? I think they only played in 75 games. So you extrapolate that out, like, can they get to 43 wins this year? When I think a lot of people think they made improvements, at least on the wing defensively. And then having Dwight Powell back, I've told you this before already, Doug, but my favorite stat from last season before Dwight Powell got injured was that the most efficient pick and roll in basketball was a Luka Doncic-Dwight Powell pick and roll. So even if Porzingis misses some time, I think Powell can slide in and at least do a good job, add some rim gravity above the rim gravity that they really haven't had otherwise. And he also was shooting threes in the preseason and making them. So with his injury, I think he was working on his shot. I'm totally bullish Mavs. I like to pick.
Brian, have you heard anything significant about this team?
Well, Preston's view on their numbers, our analytics guys feel the same way. They feel that the Mavericks actually probably underachieved in win total last year based on their performance. But the huge thing with them is Porzingis. He is out until at least late January, early February, with a knee injury. How much his absence from the lineup, what it means for their win loss is debatable. They do have a reasonably deep team, and the way that they play without him, they have Maxi Kleba, who's a very functional backup, and then they're getting Dwight Powell back from an Achilles, although it's a short Achilles recovery, but getting him back also helps. But I think a big part of them again will be health. But we'll say that about everybody. Luka is a fair bet this year for MVP, and if he has an MVP season, it'll mean they hit the over here. So if you're bullish on Luka as MVP, you should be bullish on this over.
Yeah, no, good point. So Preston, you get the always desirable back-to-back picks. So you got a little, you don't have to like play cat and mouse and try to figure out who the others are going to take.
Yeah, after that's you. True. I'll go with my favorite over and my favorite under. And the over is one I've just become more and more keen on. I don't know if this is the one you were thinking of, Doug, but this Rockets number, and I know this is going to be like the biggest discussion because of the James Harden situation, but, and maybe Brian has more intel, but like, if he just buys in to this Rockets team and realizes that they are actually really good, like there's no reason this team can't win 35 games, 34 and a half, 35. They don't even have to be a 500 team. And for starters, James Harden, one of the best players in the world, one of the most prolific scorers we've ever seen. Like him by himself, just with a few guys like from 24 Hour Fitness, they'll be a 500 team in the NBA. Like Harden is that good. So this is just disrespectful, I think, of what James Harden's abilities are. If you really think he's going to get traded, whether it's Miami, I know there was more rumors today about Miami. Obviously Brooklyn's been in the mix, the Sixers, like it could happen, but I'm not so sure that they can't get to the number anyway, even if Harden was only to play a limited portion of the season. And then you look at what they replaced Russell Westbrook with, and I know they lost Robert Covington, but Christian Wood, vastly underrated player in the general audience's eyes. People will see now just how talented he was. He was stuck in Detroit. And they can also go more traditional now, play with a center and a big instead of the uber small ball they were trying to do with Russell Westbrook. And on top of that, by the way, Harden's never played with a big that can space the floor. Wood shot nearly 40% from three last year. That's going to be an addition to just opening things up for him that they haven't had in the past. John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, these guys looked really good in a few of the preseason games. John Wall, I think people forget because they're like, oh, this isn't going to work. It doesn't fit. He doesn't shoot. The 2017-2018 season, John Wall shot over 37% on over four attempts from three per game. He actually has done it before. And now for over 700 days, he's probably just been standing around shooting threes. And by the way, catch and shoot corner threes, small sample. But those last two seasons before he got hurt, he shot 50% on catch and shoot corner threes. He actually works and pairs better alongside James Harden than Russell Westbrook ever did or would have. So I think this actually works. They still have PJ Tucker. Eric Gordon's coming off like a career worst efficiency wise season. He's going to improve. I like the Rockets, and I took them 5-1 to win the division. I think you can take even longer shots if you, and I personally think they have a chance to really make a run. And it won Luka injury, and then that division's wide open, which is why I took a shot on the 5-1, because I think they're by far that second best team, despite the Pelicans are going to get hype, the Grizzlies are going to get hype. So I love Houston. And then real quick, I'll just hit on the under, and then you guys can take it from there.
Hold on.
You want to talk it through? That's fine. Go for it.
Yeah, well, I love Christian Wood. Anyone who's bet the NBA or is a junkie or a fantasy hoopster knows Christian Wood is a stud, at least statistically. I'm excited to see him thrive with a team like Houston and maybe some other stars. Brian, what are you hearing? I mean, obviously they're demanding a lot. So even if they trade hard, they're going to get good players back. So I can't fault Preston at all for the over here.
Yeah, this is a pure gamble because I agree that if James Harden plays the season for the Rockets, they'll be over 500. He is a spectacular player, even in the competitive West. And I would say if I had to hedge, I would say that the most likely trade for James Harden will be for Ben Simmons. They may mess around for a while on what else would be in the trade, or try to play bully ball or whatever. But that's the trade that makes the most sense for Houston, and that's the trade that I think Philly is ready to do. So you're getting Ben Simmons, you're getting back another all-star. The number is a juicy number. It's highly unpredictable because Harden could be traded for prospects in 10 days. He could be traded for Ben.
You really
Simmons.
Think they would entertain prospects like do that?
Well, let's put it this way. Like, let's say, I mean, I actually just reported out a story that the Heat have ended trade talks.
Okay.
But those could get back. You're going to have a different win profile if you trade for Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson than if you trade for Ben Simmons. You may be a better team in 2 years if you trade for Hero and Robinson, but it may affect this season. But this is a number that you see on James Harden team and figure that's getting beat. It's speculative, but I understand why he's doing this.
Gotcha. Okay. Preston, you're up again, the snake draft. Now the pick I was alluding to earlier was an under. So you have to grab it or I'm going to take it from you.
All right. It better be the Pistons, cause that's who I was going to take.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of these extreme sides of these win totals. Like, there's going to be teams that go way under their win total that are just super bad. There's going to be teams that go way over their number that are the best teams in the league. You know, all the win totals in every league every year are kind of compressed. So try to pick out the teams that I think have the most downside. And, well, when we're talking about the NBA, you kind of have to think about tanking when you're looking at unders and teams that are already like 23.5, 23 is their win total. And during the draft, and even those days kind of prior and after, what Detroit did for me was kind of outline their game plan and their path. And I mean, they were trading competent players like Luke Kennard for extra picks in the draft. They were taking on washed up guys like I think Trevor Ariza, Dwayne Dedman. I don't even know, they might have waived these guys already, but their kind of approach there gave me an inside look on, hey, this is where we're going this season. And that was playing a lot of youth and probably tanking for a couple of seasons if needs be, until we can kind of rebuild here in Detroit. Now, they still have Blake Griffin, who may be a piece and valuable to someone eventually, and Derrick Rose. And so those are two guys that maybe are on the way out. If not, then this will be harder to go under. But I will say this, and by the way, people that they mentioned the Jeremy Grant signing, which was after the fact, and I wrote up the under, you know, earlier when we did that article originally. But, you know, Jeremy Grant's like coming off of the, like, the highlight of his career was that Clippers series. He's not that impactful of a player positively, or at least not as the guy. Like, he was a fine sixth, seventh man for Denver. And, you know, he did okay on Kawhi for a couple of games. Like, that's the max you're going to get from Grant. I'm not really too concerned that they did spend money on him. They had to spend some money on somebody, and it happened to be him. But last year, you know, Detroit as a whole, this was a team that was mostly trying last season. They only got to 20 wins. They played 66 games. So can they get to 24-72 with what I think will be a younger roster that management, I think, kind of gave us that.
And they lost Christian Wood, too.
And they lost Christian Wood, who was their most impactful and best player last season, if you look at the numbers. So it's an under for me. And, you know, there's going to be a couple Eastern teams that win 15-17 games. And I hope this is one. And I think it definitely will be if they end up trading Blake Griffin and or Derrick Rose. If not, then I think they're about a 21-22 win team, which then I would still like under at 23.5.
Well, and they got, you know, they lose some of their shooters, too. I mean, that's, I mean, I can't believe we're talking about some of these guys like Jeremy Grant this early, but. Anything to refute that, Brian, before we move on?
No, they're bottom three in the league in total and overall talent. And again, you can't count on their most talented player, Blake Griffin, to be healthy. He will probably skip back-to-backs because of his knee issue. So you're going to figure on him missing a number of games anyway. I have no problem with that pick.
Yeah. All right. So my next play is the Sixers over. And that's another pick I sort of gleaned from the Daily Wager crew. The other ones I've made, I like, but I think I'm going to save them for another round.
This is one of the biggest movers from the opener to now.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, I like what Daryl Morey's doing. And when I was talking about the Mavs, I was going to mention Seth Curry, but I like bringing in a guy like Curry, who's pretty underrated, albeit, you know, overshadowed by his brother. But I feel like they're going to make it work one way or another. Either they're going to bring in Harden for Simmons, or they're going to just make it work. But spacing it out with shooters, and I think as players – lose like Embiid, I think they soften their stubbornness. And, you know, we saw with other big men, and I think he's going to be in better shape. I do. I think he's going to evolve as an adult and get his act together, so to speak, because he's so talented. I've said this before. Odds makers have told me they move the point spread when he sits a game out, kind of like, you know, LeBron and Giannis. Like, he's that impactful because of both ends of the court. And you know, with Doc Rivers, I feel like some teams take the regular season a little too seriously. We've said that, like with the Rockets a couple years ago when they had to get the one seed. The Bucks have obviously gone all in. I think the Sixers, if they had to do one or the other, would play all in kind of on the regular season versus be comfortable getting a six seed or something like that. That in years past, they were derailed by injuries. But what that did is that helped them develop some of their bench, which made them, I thought, a better better team come playoff time. But the problem was they had serious injuries come the playoffs. So I think the Sixers, all these moving parts with Doc and all that, I think it's a coaching upgrade, although Doc has certainly had his shortcomings in recent playoff runs. I think it is a coaching upgrade. I like this team. Brian, have you heard much with this whole, other than the Harden trade rumors, like just how the dynamic is unfolding in Philly?
There's analytics all over the place predicting Philly to be better this year, specifically on their three-point shooting. 2 years ago, the lineup that they had with Harden and Simmons,
with Butler and Redick and all that.
with actually being before the Butler trade, with Embiid and Simmons together was really good. They were 20 points. They outscored their opposition by 20 points per 100 possessions with shooters in that lineup, which is one of the reasons why them going to a non-shooting lineup was kind of lunacy and cost the coach and the GM essentially his job. The GM didn't get fired, but he got someone hired over him. Last year when Simmons and Embiid played together, they only outscored their opposition by half of a point per 100 possessions. So wow. The idea is that putting shooters back in there, I don't have it right in front of me, but the Sixers last year on quote wide open three-pointers, which is 6 feet or more of space, shot 2.5% less than the league average for wide open three-point shooters, which meant that they were in the bottom five in the league in wide open three-point shooting because they didn't have great shooters. Well, they brought in Seth Curry, who was second in the league in wide open three-point shooting. So just the addition of him alone could edge that number back up and make a huge difference. So there is some strong analytical support as to why this team will be much improved. And frankly, I think it's one of the reasons why they aren't itchy to make a Harden move, because they may want to see what they have.
Yes.
With this lineup where, you know, they've gone out and added Danny Green and added Seth Curry to play the J.J. Redick role. And frankly, just in general, play smaller lineups that make more sense. So I certainly understand being bullish on them.
And there's definitely like just a improvement scale that a guy as young as Simmons is going to take. Like he's going to take a natural step forward. Now, what that means, I don't think it's going to be a 3-point shot, but he's just going to be a better player because he's so young and he came in so raw, so to speak. Preston, anything in terms of analytics or whatnot that we left out?
Sure. Just one last thing to add on the Embiid front, just because I think, you know, analytics gets this bad reputation, especially in the NBA where it's like, oh, 3-pointers, analytics shoot a lot of threes. That's because that's what Morey did in Houston. But, you know, ultimately it's trying to maximize and optimize how many points you can score per possession on offense and then how many you can limit defensively each possession. And Embiid last year in direct post-ups, he had the fourth most efficient points per direct post-up. It was 1.14 and he wasn't surrounded with shooters. So you, a few double teams where he kicks out to these guys that are missing open threes at a way higher clip than most of the league, like Brian alluded to. You had Danny Green and Seth Curry and these guys around him. You know, they're going to be even more efficient, I think, in Embiid post-ups. And that was already fourth best. And if you like kind of, you know, 1.14, the only team that had a better offensive rating was the Dallas Mavericks, who had historically one of the best offenses we've ever seen.
With Seth Curry.
Yeah. And now it's true. They lost Seth Curry and now he's in Philadelphia. So it sets up, I think, perfectly to, you know, Morey isn't stupid, right? He's not going to just jack a ton of threes because that's what Houston did necessarily. But I think they're going to go through Embiid, who, by the way, led the preseason in usage rate. It was like 48.2%, I think. It was like 8% higher than the next guy. So he's their guy. They're going to feed him down low. They're not going to have him shooting 20 to 24 footers all the time. They have everyone else around him, you know, outside of Simmons to do that. And I just think I'm very bullish on the offense being just drastically better than it was a year ago. And the defense was already pretty good. And Embiid, I think, had a down year more or less defensively. It was an awkward year for the team as a whole. But if he gets back to where he was 2 years ago defensively, then you're going to see those Simmons-Embiid lineups back to where they were 2 years ago as well.
All right, good stuff. Okay, Brian, you're up now.
Okay, I'm going to take the
back-to-back.
I'm going to take the Celtics under 45. So Celtics lost one of their, you know, they really had six good players last year, and then there was a pretty sharp drop off, although Daniel Tice is an interesting role player. And they lost one of them for nothing. And Kemba Walker is going to be out for a significant period of time with his with a knee injury. And I just don't think they're going to be quite as good. And again, in the Eastern Conference, there is a lot of parity at the top. There are going to be some teams that are really good teams that are not going to make it out of the first round in the East this year. And just because of the strength overall of the league. So it's not that I think that Boston is not still a contender. I just think that their margin for error that they had last year is going to shrink tighter because they have a talent drain. And so I think this is a team that I'm not feeling great. I think that they have taken a step back from where they were a year ago.
How do you think Tristan Thompson fits into that? Because I thought it was a really nice acquisition for them.
Yeah, I mean, they struggled with, you know, especially offensive rebounding. I mean, he will be able to help them there.
But they needed a real big.
That's true. And but he is hurt, and he's not even really practicing yet. So obviously it's not going to maybe affect him the whole season, but you know, they have guys who get banged up too. Tice gets banged up. You know, and if you look at their bench, there's just not a lot there. Unless you're really bullish on Grant Williams, their bench is just not very good. And
lost so, Wanamaker, their shooter.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, they're relying heavily on Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague, you know, former All-Star, but certainly the key word there being former. They're relying on him a lot this year. Maybe it'll work out for him, but I still think they're a good team. I just don't think they're, you know, again, there's going to be nights where, you know, again, you know, they have a lot of games against Brooklyn and Toronto and Philly and Miami and Milwaukee and Indiana. I mean, these are all going to be tough games for them.
Preston, you kind of nodded verbally, if that makes any sense. But I remember last year on the pod, you said this was the first year that you were not doing Brad Stevens over. I think you had done it like five straight years or something like that. Are you in agreement with this underplay?
I am. Even just my like raw projection is lower than the 45. And I think there's still 45 and a halves in the market as well. So if people are shopping around and like this one, I have it more like 44. So it's not like a huge discrepancy, but that's like, you know, I'm trying to, when I make my projections, given a certain amount of like games played for each player. And there's just a lot of uncertainty on even Thompson from the get go. And Tice is Brian mentioned it. He doesn't usually play the full season. So then is it Robert Williams and Grant Williams that are the bigs, and you're already out Gordon Hayward and Kemba Walker because Hayward left and Walker is at least injured to start. It's really thin. And that's ultimately in this type of season. And I think we'll get to it more in some other teams and other season win totals, but the season's more compressed. There wasn't as much of a turnaround time for these teams. And I think depth will be more significant and matter more this year than in typical seasons. And obviously Boston just isn't deep. So that is definitely one I would have been looking at picking, maybe even on this next go around. So I agree with Brian for sure.
Cool. All right, my man, one more.
All right, I'm going to stick my neck out, I feel, for the first time here. And I am going to go Pelicans 35 over. Zion has looked good in the preseason. It's been a short preseason. He lost, from what I hear, he lost 27 pounds from the bubble until he reported for camp. And that was more, I mean, he's obviously worked to do it, but it was more of a function of how out of shape he was in the bubble. I think he definitely can improve there. The other thing is he shot free throws really well. I mean, small sample size, but he shot free throws really well in the preseason. And they got him working with a new development coach who's really improved his free throw shooting. And this is important. He shot 64% on free throws last year. Everything he does is inside the paint. And, you know, with him and Steven Adams, they are, I think, going to pound the offensive glass. I think you're going to see them. While you may think, oh my gosh, that team doesn't have spacing, Steven Adams isn't going to space the floor. Well, I agree, but Steven Adams is going to get them extra possessions. And I think if Zion can shoot 75 to 80% from the line, if that's a meaningful improvement and he's going to be healthy. It's a major difference. And then Brandon Ingram, it continues to look like he's showing terrific development. Now, they obviously lost Drew Holiday, you know, they do have Eric Bledsoe, who is a winning player. And we could debate whether he's a winning player in the playoffs, but he has been the starting point guard in a team that won 60 games the last 2 years. So it's not like they're replacing him with a nobody. I think they're going to be a winning team, and I see them fighting for the playoffs, play-in tournament, and I see them over 500. So I'm gonna go over 35, hoping Zion doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that team because of the youth, the West, all that stuff, and losing a guy like Holiday. Preston, what about yourself? What do your model have?
Sure, really quick. So the model likes them better than last year's team, but what's interesting is they don't model out to necessarily be much better, which is just speaks to how everyone else in the West outside of the Thunder has improved. Maybe the Kings haven't, you know, they're probably about a similar outlook. So for me, it's one of those, like, yeah, I think you have to give him credit. By the way, I don't think Stan Van Gundy, I don't think gets enough credit for how he kind of forwarded the NBA game with still having a big, but then basically using Dwight Howard to just shoot a lot of threes and, you know, capitalize on analytics and the value of the three pointer. And I just think he'll find ways to, like, you know, we talk about EV or expected value and betting, but just, you know, from play to play, game to game, I think he's going to be fantastic. He'll be an upgrade. Maybe he's worth a few wins. So I wanted to give him some love because I don't think he gets enough love for the Magic and what he did there, just because they never actually won anything. Never won a full title. Lakers ended up beating him. But I if I had to bet it, I think I would just, like, because I like to root for the guys. I'm a Lakers fan, so I still am Alonzo and Ingram stan. So I'd probably go over, but I'll say my model has it right at like 35. So it's basically, I think, right on market.
Good part. Good point about the Van Gundy back in Orlando. He was the one who prevented a Kobe LeBron finals, taking down, I think it was, what was it, 55 win Cavs team, the one seed. LeBron hit the
66 win.
Really?
Jeez, really?
Why do I have 55? Wow. Yeah, so that was when LeBron hit the game winner from like half court in game two to make it 1-1.
Yep.
That was crazy. But yeah, it was Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis and
two guys who got suspended for steroids shortly thereafter. People in Cleveland will remind you. both of whom hit game-winning shots inside 1 second in that final.
That was a fun right. series.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then they missed one in game two against the Lakers, which was obviously Courtney Lee.
Courtney Lee on the inbound pass at the right at the rim.
Yeah. The alley-oop or whatever. Okay, so my next play is not my third favorite, but I think it'll be off the board come round four. So I like this a lot more, but free agency did them really well, and it's the Lakers, and I'm going to go under. I really think that the pieces they added with Matthews and some of the other guys just really – and then Horton Tucker may be good for all we know. I mean, he's been playing great in the preseason, so maybe just his advancement is going to maybe lead to some more wins because of what LeBron said, that, you know, the 2 months off is not enough. So, yeah, he'll probably play like Christmas, but – an opening night, but I think he's going to take some time off. I think Anthony Davis will as well. And I think people need to remind themselves like how hungry this team was a year ago. They had missed the playoffs. LeBron had missed the playoffs. He had his first like significant injury of his career. And there was a lot of naysayers saying he couldn't do it from the beginning. And then they had Anthony Davis and then Vogel, and they had to set the tone, and they just kind of had to, they were all in on last season. Now there's a little bit of a comfort level, complacency, if you will. LeBron in the past has demonstrated an inability or indifference for the one seed. And I also think, the bubble hurt a lot of teams. And we know we've talked about the Clippers. We know those reports out there, but the Lakers not having to travel. So everything on a neutral court, some of the chalk was just benefited as opposed to having to travel, go in other people's buildings. So maybe they're like a 7-point favorite on a neutral. And then they're like instead laying 2.5 on the road. And they're getting everyone's best shot because it's LeBron and it's the Lakers and the defending champs. So I just think the, you know, and someone mentioned earlier in this podcast, the compressed schedule, I think there's a lot of factors leaning towards under here for 47.5. Now I mentioned the depth, those guys will help. And then little things like Klay Thompson being out for the Warriors is going to maybe translate to another win or two for the Lakers. But I just think in general, and the unknown of the COVID and unknown of just injuries in general, I have to play under 47.5, but I don't love it like I did going into the, when the totals first came out because of the free agency that they've added. Brian, you're obviously connected with all teams and Lakers move the needle the most. What have you heard with this squad?
Yeah, I love their offseason. They're so much more well-rounded in depth, but I will say that they are changing their style of play a little bit. And their center play last year, which was really highly based on athleticism, has changed. They changed their centers, and I don't know if LeBron's going to play point guard as much since Schroeder being traded. Now, they're still the title favorites, but it could, I guess, affect them a little bit in the preseason or in the season. It's hard to know where LeBron's motivation is going to be as this goes along. Historically, LeBron's teams have not been the one seed. They have taken losses, and he sort of eased into seasons. Last year, he felt like he couldn't do that. Last year was a departure from the way he played. If you follow the trend of LeBron's career, his teams kind of start off slow. Even that, the best Miami Heat team he was on when they had the 26-game win streak, it wasn't until the second half of the season that they caught fire. They typically start a little slow. So it's not an unreasonable position to believe that might go under.
And it's one of those things that could go wrong early, right? You could be like, oh my God, Marc Gasol and all these guys. Like, you'd just be sitting there like, what am I thinking? How's this team going to lose as many games as they need to go under? But
like you said, there's a lot of history that shows us that. Preston, I know you're a Laker fan as well. Any thoughts there before you pick back-to-back?
I would have bet under, but Harrell, Schroeder, and Marcus Gasol, I mean, he mentioned changing the offense. You saw some of these preseason games, they're running Marcus Gasol high-low, and he's just dropping dimes to everyone moving off the ball. KCP, Kuzma, THT, like, the offense is, it's like very Andrew Bogut, Golden State Warriors-esque when it's Marcus Gasol kind of running that high post, which was really fun. And then they did it well. Now they were doing it against a Clippers team that looked like they didn't even care to be there. But they have, I think, a lot more upside as far as their depth and grinding during a regular season if LeBron and AD were to miss games and load manage frequently, which was kind of our angle early on looking at under. It was just because, you know, the season, LeBron didn't even want to start at this point this soon. And if he ends up sitting 15 games out, or maybe it's more like 8 to 10, but if that's the case, it's going to be tough to get over 47. Now I think they have the ability to. So I'm passing out at this point on a Lakers total.
All right, you're up next.
All right, I'm going to go with the Hawks under 34.5. And ooh, this will be, I think they're one of the sexier names out there, overs, with just the fact that they signed all these guys to kind of surround Trae Young. Everyone's talked about how, you know, this is the year for management coaching, or otherwise if they don't make a run or make a playoff run, then, you know, they could get let go to some degree. The hype is they bring in Danilo Gallinari, they bring in Bogdan Bogdanovic, bring in Rondo. They have Clint Capella, who will be there, who didn't play much last season, but they got him in a trade with Houston. Cam Reddish, everyone expects to make a leap. At least that's the discussion. I don't personally necessarily see it. Chris Dunn's there now. DeAndre Hunter, maybe he makes another leap too. Kevin Huerter. I mean, they're just so deep. So I'm going to talk about why they could be good. It's because they brought in all these pieces. They're hoping that it's just enough talent. I love John Collins. I think he's great. They're so deep. So in this compressed season, I think depth will play a factor and a role, maybe, you know, more heavily than it has in past seasons. But here's the thing. Last year, they played in 67 games. All right. They won 20 of them. They were 20-47. You look at their underlying metrics, like their Pythagorean wins, they were one of the more overachieving teams at 20 wins. Their actual points scored versus points against, they were a 16-win team last year. Again, in only 67 games. So they're going to play more like 72 now. Maybe they were more like a, you know, 18-20 win team last year on a 72 game schedule. But the question is, do the additions of Bogdanovic and Gallinari, kind of the main two pieces, you can throw Rondo in there, and then just the development of the youth, is it worth 15 games to a season win total in an East that I think a lot of us agree is better as a whole? There's still going to be some bottom feeders, but even teams like the Wizards and, you know, the Magic are going to be making pushes at a playoff run. The Nets are going to be a lot better. I just don't see that. Now, my projection is closer to 32, so at under 34.5, I'm definitely betting under here. I know some other guys that do NBA work that have this even lower, like 28 range, and I'm not that low. I think I'm trying to value, to some degree, the depth and having a 10th or 11th guy that are Rondo and Huerter being more, I should say Kevin Huerter, more valuable than, you know, say a team like Boston who just does nobody at that point. So, but even at 32, this is just way too high for the Hawks.
It's funny. I'm buying a little bit of the hype because they're going all in on analytics. I think their offense was like a bottom third in terms of efficiency, and they still had a guy like Trae Young go 30-9, top five in both points and assists. I think 60, there was 100-1 out there to win MVP. I think it was worth the stupid flyer because you just never know. Anything from your camp, Brian, if you will?
I was way wrong on the Hawks last year. I thought they were going to be much improved. They were not. There is an arms race in the East, not only for the top, but also for the bottom of the playoffs. You look at Charlotte, Atlanta, and Washington all making, they're all under pressure to make the playoffs for different reasons. And then there's Orlando, who was a playoff team last year. I think the wins, or every win in the East, is going to be a fight. This team has a lot of offensive firepower, but is woeful, dreadful defensively. Trae Young, had the DFL position, which, you know what that means, in ESPN plus minus defense the last 2 years. I think last year he was like 503 out of 503 in all players playing, and the year before he was like 512 out of 512. Hmm. And so they signed Chris Dunn, which I think was a nice signing to help their perimeter defense, but he is already hurt, and it's probably going to be out at least a month. So I'll tell you one thing. If they go under on this win total, Lloyd Pierce, the coach, is going to get fired, because there is high expectations there because they spent all this money. And I do think that they do have some talent, but I just think the competition is going to be tight. So I begrudgingly, after being burned last year, I'm going to be shy and agree with the under on this.
All right, next up.
All right, we talked about extremes. If there's one team in the West that just severely underachieves, it's the Thunder. They have 37,000 first round picks coming up. They obviously have built this roster to not really be a win now roster anymore, despite bringing in Al Horford and like George Hill. I'm not sure how long those guys are even playing or on the team. It's going to be a let's play all the young guys and see what we got here. I love Darius Bazley. I think he's an awesome fantasy basketball pick. I have him in like two of my three main leagues. Love SGA. I have him in one of my main leagues. Alexei J. Poku, or however you're going to pronounce his name, a rookie out of Europe that can do a little bit of everything. Kind of reminds me of Andrei Kirilenko, but he can also shoot the three ball better than AK-47.
Kirilenko had more weight on him. This guy. Yeah,
I mean, it'll take some time, of course. But they need to see what they have with some of these guys. I know. Yeah. I know two people that bet him to win Rookie of the Year actually at 110-1. I didn't, but they took a shot. So the Thunder, I think, is just like everyone on the West is on another level compared to them. And even if somehow Horford and George Hill played the entirety of the season, I still have this projected at like 21. So 22 and a half, like that's like, best case scenario. I still think this is an under, and I just don't know if Horford and Hill are going to be playing and they're just going to be, you know, like the process level Sixers if they're not, and trying to see what they have with their youth and setting up a rebuild. So under, I like Frank Jackson. He's another guy, you know, they have off the bench, but just, I mean, these aren't guys that are going to impact winning. More or less, at least not at this point in their careers.
Yeah, and I think the Billy Donovan like saying thanks but no thanks where this organization's heading is very telling, because it shows you what went on behind closed doors. Brian, you're also a guy who knows what went beyond closed doors. Anything to add there before we go?
Billy Donovan was never coming back. The Thunder have made the playoffs 12 of the 13 years they've been in Oklahoma City. They are tanking because it's a good draft class. It's a good time to do it. They have the equity to do it, and you will see that reflected in the way they play.
Yeah, they're all in clearly on rebuilding, so to speak. All right, next pick, Preston.
I think I went too. It's up.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry. Okay, so I was looking at the Thunder under as well. I'm going to go to an over on a bad team, and that's the Cavaliers. Brian, I texted you about a month ago or so, and I didn't like what I was getting back, so I ignored it. I like this over because so they had since traded Tristan Thompson, and we knew that was likely. And frankly, Kevin Love is perpetually in trade rumors. So I'm just not sure many people are going to want him. So I just think this team like plays hard, and it's an organization that's not committed to tanking. And the backcourt, Sexton, Garland, I really like, and some of just their role players. And I think they had to get the stench of Beeline and those unfortunate comments kind of out. And then now Biggerstaff's the official coach moving forward. I just think there's a lot of positive mojo within the locker room, and to grind out, you know, whatever you need for this 23 wins to hit the over, I think is certainly doable, because I just think they're going to be like a frisky home team. And if Drummond does not get traded and he opted in, obviously, like, I think they could be, they're not a playoff team, but I just don't think, because they're not tanking, I think they're going to be like a sneaky, annoying team to have to play like on their home court.
Well, Drummond's in a contract year. He just saw what Rudy Gobert got paid. He's going to want to try to prove himself in that regard. So he's going to put up big numbers. Their draft pick so far, Isaac Okoro, has looked pretty good.
Oh, that was my other thing. I think he's like NBA ready defensively too. I think he can play right away.
His issue is it looks like he's more of a two than a three, and their team is loaded with twos and they need threes. Kevin Love played one half of preseason basketball and got hurt. So when Kevin Love misses games, they're in a bottom three talent situation. When Kevin Love plays, I mean, he puts up 20 and 10. And, you know, you have him and Drummond getting rebounds and scoring points, you're going to get some wins. I just don't know how much Love is going to be able to play. The sneaky little trick on the Cavs is they seem to play better as a team when Colin Sexton doesn't play. Because he is a bit of a ball dominator. Yeah. So he is – we'll see if he plays more of a team game in his third year. I'm indifferent on this one. Like I said, I think there will be nights when I think the Cavs could beat anybody in the league and they will get some big wins, but there are going to be nights when they look hideous. So
hopefully only 45 nights like that. Preston, anything with your metrics, so to speak?
Nope, I've got nothing to add. I wouldn't bet over. So no offense, Cleveland fans. It's just the bottom of the tier East, like whether it's them, the Pistons, the Knicks, I could only go one way. It's under, but one of the teams will probably overachieve too. So maybe it's Cleveland.
All right, Brian, back to back for you.
All right. I'm going to go over on the Utah Jazz at 41. The Western Conference, I mean, this is going to be very difficult for some of these West teams to try to figure this out. I think the Jazz have great talent. We saw Donovan Mitchell take a step forward in the bubble last year. He was great. He and Gobert are signed. They know they're going to be together. They will get Bojan Bogdanovic back. They retain Jordan Clarkson. They have a new owner who's willing to spend, and you already are seeing the difference. The amount of money they paid a six-man Jordan Clarkson, the fact that they used their entire mid-level on Derek Favors to bring him back. He was, you know, he was much more comfortable there in the past, as in the past. And the fact that they paid Rudy Gobert $200 million, one of the highest contracts in league history, shows there's now a billionaire owning the Jazz. They are taking a step into a small market, deep pocket franchise after decades of being a shallow pocket, small market franchise. So I look at them possibly even being able to make deals during the season to spend more money. And I also think Gobert and Mitchell are past their problems. They're both paid and should be happy. This very easily could be a losing bet, but I am not as high on some of the West teams, and I think the Jazz will benefit from that. Like, I think the Jazz will benefit from the fact I don't think the Warriors are going to be as good as people think they are. So 41 is a big number for them, but I like them.
Preston and I were both big on them last year. They didn't pan out, injuries and whatnot. Preston, what do you think about them this year?
So I was looking at that recently. So we were bullish Utah last year, and then we say it didn't pan out, which I guess expectations wise, it didn't. Like, Conley missed some time. He was injured, and the fit with Conley took a long time to really work and really wasn't as good until the bubble, to be quite frank.
Right.
And Bogdanovic wasn't even playing in the bubble. Like, do you know how many games off the top of your head, Doug? Don't look. How many games did the Jazz win last year? They played in 72. How many did they win?
Probably like 40.
44. They like crushed this total at 41. And this is an underachieving Jazz team that's actually probably better this year, because adding Favors, I think, was massive. Locking, they didn't have Clarkson for the majority of last season either, by the way. I believe that was a midseason trade. So, like, they're a better team that played like a 44-win team last year. The Pythag expected wins lineup, their 44 wins, I think, was like a legitimate 44. And just because this is like, I love to buy on teams that get hyped and when it's wrong, even though I don't think the Utah Jazz hype was wrong. They were still really good last year. They probably should have beaten the Nuggets, right? In that 3-1 lead with a double digit lead at halftime, and they just somehow blew it away. Let's buy on them again when people aren't really talking about them. So I do like the Jazz over. This is one that, after talking to some other people, I've convinced myself that I need to bet. And so, yeah, I like it at 41.
And this is a team that will benefit with a regular, you know, home and away schedule as opposed to the bubble, because sure. Yeah. I think, especially when teams come east and they do their 5-trip, I just think they've inflated home records. Them and Denver over the years typically have had inflated home records because players are more likely to mail it in when it's a long trip and they kind of just know what it takes in the altitude. That's just like the NBA fan in me over the years have kind of sniffed that. That's why I think some of those George Karl Denver teams were just not that good come playoff time, because players adjusted. And it wasn't like a long road trip to go to the altitude. That's just my thought process. I could be wrong, but I certainly see the logic there, Brian.
Yeah. And so I'm going to follow it up by saying my next pick, I'm going to go under the Nets on 45.
Ooh, I like it.
Because while I am excited about the Nets and excited to watch them, and I certainly recognize that Durant looks fantastic, I think they have a great chance of being a top 3 offensive team and a bottom 7 or 8 defensive team. I think defensively they are going to get eaten alive. And in a competitive Eastern Conference, I mean, I think they could still have the 3 or 4 seed. But I think in a competitive Eastern Conference, again, they have a lot of games against Philly, against Toronto, against Boston, against Milwaukee, against Miami. I think that they're going to take some losses because of their defense. Plus, I don't think Kyrie and Durant are going to play back-to-backs. And, you know, I think that's what they have to do. And so even though they've got firepower, there's going to be some guaranteed missed games. So I think 45 is just a little juicy, Even if it was like 43, I think I would feel differently, but I'm going to go under there.
It's going to be interesting to see if there's growing pains with Nash. Now he's going to have D'Antoni on his bench and some other experience, but that'll be interesting. Preston, why did you say you like it right away?
I think you just, I love fade in the hype, man. And yeah. We did it last year because they were getting hyped even with just Kyrie and KD wasn't even playing yet. I think it was my second biggest win total was the Nets under. And that's the only way you could bet. You're like, you're always paying a premium betting an over on a team that has all these new pieces that are getting hyped up. And so, I think he makes a ton of great points. It's under for Nets or pass.
Yeah, no, that would be the only way I'd play that. You're right. I forgot about the Kyrie sort of like, not team, you know, just the, doesn't always, locker rooms aren't always the best when Kyrie's around. So I think that's part of it too. And he always finds a way to miss a lot of time. So I'm with you on that front. So that would make mean I'm up and I'm so like out of teams. I have like leans, I guess we can do some of that.
Yeah. We'll fly through these quicker, but yeah. Just throw out some leans you like.
Yeah. I'm going to take the over in the Suns. And I know there's hype on this team with the Chris Paul trade and there is a little bit of a tax, but it's because of their supporting cast. I love the shooters they have, guys like, you know, Cam Johnson and I just think the team is deep and Chris Paul will change the mindset of losing. Not that they had a losing culture before, but he just sort of that intangibles guy. And I think they're definitely on the rise and they're going to take every game really seriously. And I do think there's a little bit of a home court edge as well. So because I have to lean one way or the other on that, I'm going to take the over in the Suns. Preston, I know you were big on the Thunder over last year with Chris Paul. What does your model have this year?
The West is just too good to have this be like value, in my opinion. I understand they were great in the bubble. They also have been horrible in the preseason.
I know.
So I think it's fair. It's one of those you want to be bullish on the Suns, and you can still be like, wow, the Suns are really good, and they're like the seventh or eighth seed in the West. Maybe they end up getting it done for you. But I think 38 is actually a fair number, but I haven't seen anyone bet under. So it's one of those like the Clemson Notre Dame game this last weekend where we're talking about it and nobody was laying the points with Clemson. And sure enough, this one kind of just, I don't know, one CP3 injury, then they don't have Rubio. So now where are they at? And it could be a struggle year, but the hype, you know, the upside definitely there too.
Anything, Brian?
I'm fine with it. I don't feel strongly about it.
Okay. All right. So that would mean Preston is up next with back to back.
I'll start with the Blazers over 40 and a half.
All right. I almost took
this
that.
Is one I haven't bet, but it's close. It's just, again, the West is so good that it's going to be tough to manufacture wins, but the moves that they made in general being Portland, I think solidified. Well, for one, I'm a huge Nurkic fan. Before he got injured 2 years back, you know, he was a top 10, I think, net rating guy individually in the league, or it was top 15. Like, they were over 10 points better per 100 possessions when he was on the floor versus when he was off. He gets hurt. You know, he comes back and he plays some in that bubble, and he was good. He looked maybe a little sore defensively, but he was shooting threes. He added that. He wasn't missing free throws. So I think during his time away, his shot was going. And then they just made, I think, huge improvements with their wing guys. Instead of Carmelo and Arizona playing a ton of minutes on the wing, it's going to be Robert Covington and like Derek Jones Jr. And then Gary Trent Jr. obviously made that push. Ronnie Hood's coming back. He missed most of the year. He only played, I think, the first few weeks of that season last year. They're just way deeper now. They have defenders on the wing, especially Covington, that can actually get some stops for him. And then you still have CJ McCollum, and you still have Damian Lillard, who I took a shot on him to lead the league in scoring, I think at 7.5 to 1 recently. And I know some guys that bet him to win the MVP. Like when Harry Giles is another guy that they picked up, you know, as like your 10th, 11th guy, I think they're in good shape. I think they're a team that's kind of always, Sats has always kind of just gotten the most out of no matter what he has. And I think mm-hmm. they're one of the deeper teams that they've had, period, to this point. And when you compare them to like the market, like the Utah market or the Denver market, we did this when we were doing a yes, no playoff bet. And, you know, the Nuggets are like minus 1600 to make the playoffs, right? It's almost a certainty. But the Blazers price was only minus 180, which, you know, implies, I don't remember off the top of my head, I believe it's like 69% or something, maybe not quite that. No, it's only 64%. Sorry. 64. So 64% they make the playoffs. My projection was closer to 69%, like minus 223. So this is just a team that's going to be, they're a little bit worse than Denver. I think they're a little bit worse than Utah, but they're not that far off, and they're just too good. I think you can kind of say, hey, there are six teams in the West that are going to make the playoffs, and they're one of them. So over 40.5, I think you have to go that direction on the Blazers.
I bet that -180 as soon as the show ended when you talked about it on air. Like, that's good. Ridiculous. And this is another team. Like, again, I keep coming back to it, but, you know, like, look, they lost in five games to the Lakers last year, right? They won game one. But, like, if that game's back and forth between Portland and L.A., like, they're going to win more than one game. And it's just the nature of the NBA season, the grind. And any thoughts, Brian, from you?
They're a great home team. They're healthier than they were last year. They had terrible injury luck last year. So just by winning at home, and I do like their moves, I think it's not a bad bet.
Cool. All right, back to back, Preston.
Chicago over. And I think a lot of people will disagree with this one, but I think they're the team in the East that you would consider a bottom feeder that isn't one. What's their current number? Do you see it there, Doug?
I'm scrolling.
28.5. There it is, 28.5. Okay. So I have them as nearly a 30-win team. This is the one I've bet, but it's close. And a lot of it just has to do with two things. The first being that last year they performed, looking at their Pythag numbers, like a 25-win team in exactly 65 games. So they won 25 games last year based on their scoring and what they gave up in a 65-game season. So you extrapolate that out to a 72-game season, they were pushing like a 27-win team as far as their performance a year ago. Now, they underachieved, and they were able to, you know, they had a bad situation with coaching. Well, they brought in Billy Donovan, who's always been able to get the most out of his young guys and the youth. And, you know, Zach LaVine, just based on what I've seen in preseason combined with Kobe White, I think they both made leaps. Like, Kobe White might be a player. Like, I think he's going to be a guy in this league. Wendell Carter Jr. just didn't fit at all last year, didn't even work. And I think he's going to have like a resurgence in his second season. Otto Porter Jr. is always a fine role player to have that was in and out of the lineup last year. He hardly really played, I think, ultimately for Chicago. Patrick Williams, rookie that looked really good in the preseason in two of the games that I watched. They won three of their four preseason games. Now, two were against the Thunder, but they beat the Rockets in one. This is a team in the East that I think can push that like Wizards level, like maybe that play-in game in the 9-10 spot for the playoffs, since they're doing that play-in for the playoffs. So at 28.5, a number that I think should be closer to 30, not quite. I think there's a little bit of value on Chicago.
I was going to do this for our Sports Center taping, but because I was so bullish on the Bulls a year ago and had to eat crow on that one,
me too.
I was just emotionally scarred. I just couldn't do it. But the upgrade from Donovan, from Boylan, is like obviously significant. And I like all the people you mentioned. Brian, you agree, huh?
Yeah, I thought the Bulls were going to be way better than they were last year. Obviously, the GM got fired. The coach got fired. I do like Kobe White, but I'm once bitten, twice shy on this team. I'll watch them with interest for sure. Once bitten, twice shy.
All right. So that means I'm up now and not thrilled about it. Got to be honest. Like many fantasy drafts, I hate my team already. But I could have said that a few rounds ago. So there's some higher profile teams left, some lesser profile. I've gone back and forth on this team, but I do think the Bucks over is the play for me. I just think they're so loaded. I think having a new sort of shot in the arm with a guy like Holiday instead of Bledsoe, and they've lost some of their other depth and added some other players, I just think that gives a team sort of an injection of excitement and a fresh start, if you will, because they do need it after the playoff runs the last couple of years and how those playoffs ended. And I don't think Buds is all of a sudden going to like load manage and do things differently, because getting the one seed is obviously better than not getting the one seed. Now, at the expense of something, yeah, but they didn't really like lose in the playoffs because they went all in on the regular season. So I am going to take over, 49 for the Bucks. I don't love it, but I think I think it's an upgrade with Holiday. I just love him and how he fits with this team defensively. And I just think Giannis will figure out a way to whatever limited him in the playoffs won't be an issue as much as we think it. And he got hurt, to be honest. He got hurt as well. And let's not dismiss that or overlook that either. Brian, anything for you on this team in terms of what you're hearing?
No, they're built to be a spectacular regular season team, which they have been the last 2 years. I don't see any reason that would change. And, you know, somebody's going to win 50 games in this season. Might as well be the Bucks.
Preston, what does your model have?
It's always too low on the Bucks and the Raptors, and then, like, in the past, the Spurs, just because these regular season juggernauts, it you know, everything's kind of compressed, kind of like the market is. And I would not bet under, but I have it a little bit lower than the market at 49. I will say this. So this is the first team that I don't think is built as deep. I think they are more built for the playoffs, assuming Budenholzer will actually play his guys more than 30-something minutes in a playoff series. But like don't know. I'm just passing. It's I would never bet an under now in a Toronto. Like is Nick Nurse and even Casey prior to that, they were just so good. I think they've gone over, for example, we'll probably get to Toronto eventually, someone will have to pick it, but they've gone over 9 straight seasons, whatever their win total was. And Budenholzer's been like that in Atlanta and then Milwaukee now, where they just go over no matter what. So I'm not betting under. So I think it's fine to go over here.
I'm excited about the Toronto conversation because of where they're playing. So that'll be interesting once we get there. Brian, back to back for you.
Let's take Toronto over. I just heard they covered over nine straight years. Never heard such a terrific stat.
That is
good.
They are
used to being uncomfortable. From what I understand, like, I don't know how they'll feel like in February. From what I understand, their setup in Tampa is fantastic. They're raving about it.
Really?
That's good. About how happy they are.
No snow. I mean, that starts there. Yeah.
So, and then they still have a really good roster. I don't know if they have the kind of roster to get back to the conference finals, but 42.5. I mean, they're going to be a, don't look now, but they finished as the number two team in the East last year. And they,
Gasol's gone. Ibaka's gone. And they lost Kawhi, obviously, from 2 years ago.
Gasol never played.
That's true.
So Ibaka is the real loss. And, they replaced him with Aaron Baines and
Baines is good.
And Alex Len. Yeah. And that's a comparable replacement. Also, there's a lot of excitement around OG Anunoby.
Oh, yeah.
Who looks like to be taking a step forward this year. So I expect there to be... I expect there to be a pretty good team, even with the Tampa home games.
And Nurkic is a wonderful coach. I mean, he's his track record, paying the dues, grinded. I mean, he's certainly regarded in that upper tier of coaches, right?
Yes, he's a top 5-6 coach in the league without question. And the other thing is, historically, because of his background coaching all over Europe and in the G League, he comes up with stuff. He's used to coaching under duress, so he'll be comfortable in this unusual situation.
I like that. All right.
My other pick is Knicks under. I've been talking about the bottom three talent in the league. The Knicks are pretty much last in talent. There is a Tibbs bounce there that could take place. They are not going to be, he is going to get them to play hard, but they are going to be outmanned almost every single night. And while there is excitement about Obi Toppin, I do not think that he will affect wins and losses. RJ Barrett has looked okay in the preseason, but again, I don't think he's affecting wins and losses at this point. I just don't think they have the talent, and I think they're tanking anyway. And I think somebody's, as Preston said, somebody's going to win 14 or 15 games, and I think they're a team that's ready to do it.
Is Tibbs going to put any players in the hospital because of minutes?
I mean, I think the bigger concern, if you're a Knicks fan, and I'm being serious, is that he will want to play some of the veteran players and some of the young than the young guys.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
And he's just got, because he's got to play the young guys. It just has to happen.
Yeah, he only knows one speed, so to speak. All right, so that means I'm up. And these are just like, I don't want to say guesses, but just educated leans, if you will. I'm going to do the under with the Clippers. And I get that they're hungry, and I just don't know whatever issues they had last year necessarily resolved. Like, is Kawhi going to play 72 games? Of course not. He's going to load manage. Paul George, has he won everyone over? I think cleaning house a little bit is going to help, but I still think there's going to be friction, and they still have to like face the Lakers and face the other good teams. Are they going to go win in Portland? I mean, they have talent, but losing Montrez is significant. Love Lou Williams, who doesn't, coming off the bench. He's great, but I do think there's question marks, and I've actually not been a huge Ibaka guy the last few years, so I don't know if adding him is like that great. Now, I've been proven wrong when they won the title and other things, but I just think there's more questions than answers with this Clippers team. As much as I respect the reports that have come out in terms of them resolving things, I don't know if that's like resolved with Paul George. I don't know if that's going to like help things. Brian, do you have any intel to add on that?
Yeah, I think you're always, last year this team sleepwalked through the regular season. They're swearing that they're not going to this year. We'll see. I think you're right. I think Kawhi Leonard has played his last back-to-back. You'd like to think that the Clippers could win some of these games without him, but they proved last year that wasn't always the case. So 47 in this year is kind of a high number for a team, for that team. So it could go either way. And I'm not going to try to talk you out of it.
Yeah. Preston, anything on that front?
Sure. Just quick. Kind of, I think they're kind of like, they're kind of like the reverse Pelicans, where I actually think the team is worse, but they underachieved so much last year. They sleptwalked through that regular season. And then the playoffs, they obviously didn't really come to fruition to playing to their talent level. So I think they can still play to a higher talent level, even though their talent level, I think, limits them some. I'm really interested to see, are they really going to start Serge Ibaka like they did for the majority of the preseason? Because I feel like they need the scoring now on a bench that isn't as deep, and they need the defense, rim protection, rebounding from Zubats in the starting lineup. So reversing those, like, they just looked awful in those two games against the Lakers. So we'll see if they figure it out. I could only bet under, though. I think it's just a team that isn't as good or as deep, and some of the other teams in the West are kind of catching up.
And my understanding with this team is, like, Kawhi is obviously the alpha, but he's not like an extroverted leader. Paul George did the talking, but they didn't command the respect that like Kawhi would. And I just don't know if still this team has like the mental fortitude, if you will, to just grind out 4-2, 5-1 road trips that it takes sometimes throughout the course. I mean, they're going to get a lot of people's best shot. They're going to go to Phoenix and win. I mean, last year they like won by a million. I think it was opening night. Or they started out 2-0 or something like that, and they went to Phoenix and got waxed. So I just think like things like that are going to help, or excuse me, occur, and that's what makes it difficult for 47 wins. All right, Preston, you're up.
I'm going to take an educated lean, as you would call it, that the Minnesota T-Wolves have one of the worst defenses in the history of basketball, which outside of the Thunder, so I think there might be a team that just really kind of tanks, not in the sense we say tank, that, you know, just like falls off in the West. And that would be the T-Wolves at 28.5. I think it's a little bit too high anyways, just from a sheer no numbers projection perspective. But D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns in limited minutes last year together. I dug these up for our show last week. Off the top of my head, I believe they were like over 20 points worse defensively. No, this is what it was. Sorry. All right. So they're over 20 points better per 100 last year when those two guys were on the floor offensively. It was 99th percentile. So they were really good on offense. Defensively, when they played on the floor together, again, this is limited minutes, but they were like minus 45 per 100 compared to where the T-Wolves average lineups were, which was zero percentile. It was the worst lineups in basketball last year, were the D'Lo and KAT lineups defensively. Jake Layman's been playing center for them in the preseason. He's not known for his defense at all. I just don't know what to expect of this team outside of there will be a lot of points. They're playing put at the third fastest pace in the league last year. They're first in pace this season in the preseason. So our team, I'm just probably going to be betting a lot of overs with, assuming everyone's playing and their lineup is, Russell, Towns, and Layman, and whoever else they want to fill it in with. But I just don't know how you're going to win enough games in this league if you can't get stops, and they're not going to get many of them.
No, they're not. That's a great point. That number is high, 28.5, all things considered, for a team that plays no defense at all. Anything, Brian? I know there's reports of maybe getting sold and stuff like that.
Who bet the under on them was the Golden State Warriors. They traded D'Angelo Russell to them and said, "We don't really care about taking Wiggins. We want your draft pick next year." And not only are we convinced you're still going to suck next year, which is this year now, because they didn't want last year's picks. They wanted it in the 2021 draft. It's a better draft. They're like, not only do we think you're going to suck next year, we think trading you D'Angelo Russell is not going to prevent you from sucking. And so the Warriors are betting the under. I think the Warriors are a smart organization.
Good point.
So I might as well go with them.
Fair point. Yeah, no, it's a good point. So they bet against him as well. All right, Preston, you are back to back.
This is one that I considered more heavily early on when they first were going up, and it's moved down from 33.5 to 32. So I wouldn't bet it now, but it's the Grizzlies under. And I'm also a little more concerned now after seeing, I mean, maybe Brian can speak to this for a second. Like Ja Morant, you always hear about, oh, this player's making, you know, they're special. They took a leap or they're making strides. From what I saw limited games in the preseason, like I think Morant actually made like a leap, even from the bubble. Where Memphis, by the way, one of the points I made for this under was like they couldn't win games in the bubble. They kind of peaked during that regular season before March, and they got into the bubble and they couldn't figure things out. And, you know, I guess was at least aligned to 33.5 as if Jaren Jackson Jr. was going to play the entirety of the season, which is not the case. I think he's out at least towards the end of January, maybe later. Although supposedly there's rumors that or reports he's grown 2 or 3 inches. But maybe that's a positive for them. Wow. But if Morant is like a top 25 guy in the NBA now, then maybe I don't like this as much, because I just give a lot of credence to guys. Like we're talking about with Harden and the Rockets earlier. Like if you're just that good, it's hard to win less than half of your games, right? Or win at least half of your games. And this is like a John Morant Grizzlies team maybe that is at least, you know, in that range. But last year, you know, they won 34 in 73 tries, and they had JJJ for most of that. And this is, you know, with everyone else around them more or less getting better in the West, I, you know, have this projected a little lower. Now, again, it's moved down to 32. I wouldn't bet it now. But for the sake of this, you know, in this draft at this point, I got to go under at 32.
Yeah, makes sense. All these picks we've done at the end or most recently is, you know, stuff I've were all my ones that are considering. So we're all kind of seeing eye to eye at the end here. Brian, anything on them for you?
So it's a very curious number. This number is a sharp number because there's some feel out there that the Grizzlies are kind of, I don't want to use the word tanking, but are kind of secretly okay with not making the playoffs this year. Now, Jaren Jackson had a meniscus injury and he could return sooner, but they have pushed his timeline back, which has led people to, and also there was some willingness from them to make Dylan Brooks available on trades during the offseason, a guy who they really like. And so there's some feel that the Grizzlies are sort of secretly saying, you know what, it may not be the worst idea in the world to punt on this wacky season and draft high in this upcoming draft. We could get another player.
Smart.
But Preston points something out, is that Ja looks great. And he may be so good that it may be tough for them to do that. So I actually was looking at this number early on, and I don't know which way they're going to go. This would be something I'd stay away from, to be honest with you, because I think the Grizzlies might be okay with missing the playoffs, but he may not let them.
It is crazy how good he was. I mean, there was such hype with Zion. Morant was not an afterthought, but just Zion grabbed all the headlines coming out. And it's been awesome to see this guy grow, and he's a leader and the team loves it. It's so cool to see unfold. It's really refreshing as a fan across the board. So good stuff there. So that means I'm up. Gosh, I mean, we're scraping the barrel, bottom of the barrel. You know what? I know there's a case to be made for the Wizards, but I'm not going to make that case. I'm going to pick the under here. I understand that they did not have anyone, so they're just basically adding Russell Westbrook, which he's a dynamic player, and his effort and all that sort of permeates in a locker room because he's such a competitor, and that's going to be very helpful to a team. But I think the roster is very lean. You know, Achimura's out for a little bit, 3 weeks, I believe. I just saw something with his eye. I just think this team outside of Beal and Westbrook stinks. Now, Bryant has been nice and he's done some nice things, but it's an extremely limited roster. In the East, we've talked about the depth there. They're going to be in the mix for that 8 seed, 7 seed. I'm just not sure. I mean, there's like 6 guarantees to make the playoffs in the East. And if based on this win total of 32.5, so you kind of need to be approaching 500. I just don't know if they're necessarily better than Orlando and better than some of those bottom tier teams in the East. So I have to take under, especially when there's like injury concerns and things like that with anyone.
I'm not sure Westbrook's going to make a difference, so I'm not going to argue with you on that.
Preston, what does your model have for this?
31.5, rounding to the nearest half. That's where I would line it if I was a odds maker. So I guess I lean your way. You know, I never bet against Bertens, so he's my guy, and I love him to death. I think he's one of the best shooters ever. And they were
able to. He got his money. Is he gonna get
He got paid. He deserved it. Yeah, I was hoping he would go somewhere else, to be honest, but I think it's close to fair. But I would lean your way.
And they got a guy. What is it? Avija.
Denny. Out of the draft. The rookie looks really solid. All around.
Gonna be good. Yeah. Their bench is not good. Robin
good
Lopez.
Good league pass team to watch.
Isaac Bonga. Neto.
Thomas Bryant. Yeah.
He's starting, I think. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's going to be – we'll know. We'll know early how this team's going to fare. All right, Brian, you're up back-to-back.
I'm going to take two teams with the same number, 44.5, and I'm going to go under on both. Denver and Miami, and it's not because I feel that strongly about it. I just think that the competition in the East and West this year are the. This is just me saying parity, and it's not saying that these teams are I'm not presenting a case why they go under. I just think that wins are going to be hard to come by. There's the overall separation between teams like 3 and 15 in this league is razor thin. And so I think wins are going to be a little more spread out this season.
Anything on those two teams? I mean, it's going to be interesting, right? Like Miami, I think both teams have distinct home court advantages, so it will be interesting to see how that plans. I believe Miami was one of those teams that was terrible on the road. I know Philly was last year. I think Miami had one of those splits as well. I can't recall. But, yeah, I mean, look, Denver obviously had a lot of buzz coming back from 3-1 down. The Clippers comeback was even more impressive than the Utah one. And we'll see. I mean, it's easier being, what are they, you know, like the hunter instead of the hunted. I'm not sure that they've reached that status wholeheartedly, but obviously there's more buzz with each of these teams than prior to last season, or at least the playoff run. All right. That means I'm up. Oh gosh. You know, it's funny. I talked about the Bulls. I'm gun shy on the over because of my pick last year. I'm gun shy on the Hornets under because of what happened last year as well. So I will take, you know, I will take the Kings under. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm going to take under 28.5 just because of the Sacramento Kings, and things don't ever seem to work out for them, and they've got some disarray always, and it's a really competitive West. So if I'm banking on all those playoff teams kind of returning, except for the Thunder, of course, and then, you know, teams like the Suns and some of these other teams, there's only a couple really bad teams out West. So I don't think Sacto is necessarily going to take this giant step forward. I do like a lot of their pieces. I mean, there are things to like with the Sacramento team. And then Bagley, I mean, he missed tons of time, but he has such length if he comes back and healthy, and he's looked pretty good at times. I just don't know if they'll be competitive and they'll shoot well at times with Buddy Hield. I just don't know if there's like enough there to translate the wins. So I'm going to have to take the under with the Kings, 28.5. Brian, right, do you have anything on there? What, Brian, do you have anybody have anything?
Luke Walton is probably one of the guys on the hottest seat in the league, and it's for a reason. And we'll see if he defies expectations, but this team lost a key player in Bogdan Bogdanovich. And there is interest in Tyrese Halliburton, I should say. But frankly, again, I don't expect a rookie to influence wins and losses. They should play for their draft pick, to be honest. They should try to tear this team down even a little bit more as the season goes on.
I mean, their second unit might be better than their first with like Halliburton, GR3, Bojlica, and Whiteside. Not bad, but there's no stars except I do like, I think De'Aaron Fox special. He's the one guy who I think is like really a difference maker at times. Yeah, Preston, you're back to back.
Real quick, I think Buddy Hield's pretty underrated. I don't know why he came off the bench last season. I guess because of Bogdanovich. But I think he'll have a monster season just as a whole, but no opinion over or under on Sacramento. I'm going to go with one. I think this one's just staring us in the face and no one knows what to do with it because there's, do you know what it is?
Spurs?
No, it's not. It's Pacers. Okay. I'm going to go Pacers over 39. And it's like so obvious if they just play like they did the last two seasons, but it's like, well, where's Oladipo at? Are they going to trade Miles Turner? The fit isn't really right, but then they just win 45 games every season anyways. So, and I know the rest of the East, some of them, at least some of the teams have gotten better. Like they can get to 39. I technically my model has this closer to 40. So it's one game off. I would lean over. So I'm just going to take it. I think they can figure it out. Brogdon missed some time last season too. And if he's healthier, although he's not healthy very often, there's maybe more upside there with Sabonis making another leap himself too. So nothing much more than that.
New coach for them.
True. Yeah. Maybe it's positive. Maybe it's negative, but
They interviewed over 25 people for that coaching job.
Really?
One of the most thorough searches. They think that they may have the diamond in the rough. Last year, Taylor Jenkins in Memphis was kind of a surprise good coach. He comes from sort of the same lineage as Nate Bjorkgren does. So we'll see. I mean, the wins are going to be hard to come by in the East. I know I'm a broken record on that, but again, a lot of nights where you're playing teams that have loaded rosters. It's not going to be simple to get to that 40 win mark.
25 guy. That's great. It's good nugget there.
That is interesting. The last one I'm going to do is the Hornets, and I'm going to go over 25.5, which I don't think anyone will be doing because everyone will point to the fact that last season They only won 23 games and 65 tries. So it wasn't quite a 72-game season. But their Pythag wins, them and the Hornets were the two most overachieving teams despite winning few games. They played like a 17-win team last year. And James, is it Borrego, the coach? There's a couple guys. Brad Stevens, they're always better in the one-score games late. It's because they do such a good job, I think, out of timeouts, down the stretch in the final minute, optimizing, you know, what the best move is or what the most significant or impactful winning play or design would be, or whether it's with a foul at a certain point or a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-2 going even a little earlier, which I know some teams are starting to look at to optimize possessions. They've seemed to just figure that out and do that perfectly. They also were one of the teams that when you look at like second spectrum numbers and play-by-play stats, underachieved relative to their shot quality. So their shot quality was positive, but they shot their effective field goal percentage was about 2% lower than what it would have been, or at least been expected to based on the shots that they were producing. So the Hornets, I think, have some upside. Obviously, they're young, and maybe they make another leap there. And I just like Brigo as a coach. I think they'll probably kind of overachieve by a few wins every season relative to their numbers, just because they were really good down the stretch in late games, and I give them a lot of credit for that.
That was well presented. I was big on the under last year, you know, ate it, and that's fine. They were stunning. Like, God, who's the point
Devonta
guard?
Graham.
Yeah. I mean, he was amazing. Was he most improved player? Was he most improved player? Did he win the award?
Brandon Ingram, I think, won, but like, yeah, I mean, Graham was like from the out of nowhere to actually a relevant player.
He was like the first guy everyone picked up on fantasy like that week. And then Bridges too. Bridges was a pretty impressive out of the gates too. So just their 3-point shooting and some other things they did was interesting last year. And I think they're trending in the right direction. That's for sure. So I'm going to do it. The Spurs, I thought the team you were alluding to earlier, Preston, staring us in the face. I'm going to do it. And 30 feels really low and I'm going to take over.
Nice.
Because of the Spurs, but also Murray back. I just love like their bench. I mean, I've had like a man crush on Patty Mills his entire career. I think the guy's just awesome. And I love like those types of guys that they just continue to find and churn out. I know guys like Lonnie Walker have been impressive at times. And, you know, Trey Lyles is like a perfect Spur. And, you know, we'll see if Aldridge is on the trade market. DeRozan, we've heard rumors here and there. I'm not a Pirtle guy, but all of it together. And it's the Spurs. I just have to take over. And we're obviously at the bottom of the league here. Or draft, I should say.
I don't know what's going to happen with the Spurs. This is probably the last thing I wanted to do because I have no idea what's going to happen. I guess I have to take the Magic and I will take the under at 32 just because the teams all around them improved and they did not. And the trade talks that they've been having for months have involved trading pieces away from their team, they've been looking for a trade for Aaron Gordon. Evan Fournier has picked up his player option and he is a candidate to be traded for something, anything near the deadline. So I think it's likely, I think they end up on the outside looking in. They lost one of their best young players, Jonathan Isaac, for the year. Another one of their guys, Mo Bamba, had COVID in June and is still not cleared to play, which is an interesting story that is not being talked about in the league. I'm going to go under there.
So this team, I was a big, even to this day, in the trust the process, I was a fan of it. I just thought it made sense. Is it good for fans and good for young fans? Probably not. But in general, the Sixers were just like an eighth seed or a seventh seed, and that was like their ceiling because of what they were paying guys who weren't really superstars. And just they were stuck in the middle of the pack and going nowhere fast. And I think the Magic are there now. I mean, as much as I love Aaron Gordon – or not Aaron – as much as I like Aaron Gordon and Vucevic, who's only a few years removed from leading the NBA in rebounding per game. And then for – like they have nice pieces, but – like there's just a kind of like shelf life of certain things that you just have to kind of go all in or just go all out. And I think they're, to your point, I think they're poised to go all out, like not good.
Well, the Magic just literally signed Markelle Fultz to a $50 million extension and I'm stunned. So I further don't exactly know what direction they're going.
Draft them in fantasy though. If you're still nerdy enough to play season long NBA fantasy, Markelle Fultz, great pick.
Really? You think he's going to be starting point guard?
He's been doing 21-6-6 in the preseason and he's starting. Yeah. I think he's actually going to be a legitimate player. He's so good defensively too that They kind of totally always believed him initially.
Then what was his issue, you know, out of the, well, you know, coming out of Washington?
He can't really shoot as well, but like he's figuring things out in life without his same, you know, mechanics. But yeah, his numbers are fantastic.
All right. So I hate my team like most drafts. I never, things don't break, you know, the right way for me. I think it all started with I was being too nice and I gave you the Pistons, but that's fun. That's just a joke, really. So I think it's fascinating, Brian. So I think just based on everything you've said, it sounds like parity is a big thing for you, like in kind of in both conferences. The Lakers are the favorite for a good reason. But by no means, I mean, we're removed from the Warriors when they were like odds on favorites when they had the Durant. I mean, there's, how would you say, like maybe 6-7 teams can win it all?
Great question. That's probably a little optimistic.
Yeah.
It's just really hard when the best of seven format, right? Like that's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, so to me, I don't think I can put the Nets in it just yet. The Nets fans would be at my throat for saying that. And I, in my view, the Celtics are not in it. So, you know, I'm not sure who's going to win the East, but I'm not sure how many teams in the East could beat the Lakers or Clippers. And then we'll see what happens, whether the Nuggets can improve. So it's probably closer to 4 or 5 for me.
Well, last year there was that top three, right? That tier, they were all, depending on the week, were the favorite, right? It was Milwaukee, Lakers, Clippers. And then the drop off, then there was like 5 or 6 teams in that next tier. And like Sixers were like, people like Preston and I were shoehorning them into that group of Raptors. So, and then the Raptors got shoehorned, but it was like Celtics. I think the Heat, we've learned, can certainly belong. The Lakers are so, I think the bubble really helped the Lakers. I know they lost, quote unquote, lost their home court advantage as the one seed, but I think just not traveling and playing these teams on a neutral court where every day they were going to be the team to favor to win, I think just really helped the talent, the top tier talent. Preston, yeah, is that crazy?
I think that's fair.
No, I mean, I don't know what it was like in there. Everything we've heard is that it was really tough. And to get through that, though, and then now looking into this season, I mean, I think it's obviously, having done it, it's only going to be a positive for, I think, those teams that were there the longest. I do think Miami has a chance. So does Milwaukee and Toronto. Boston, not really. The Nets, not really. So I think there's maybe 3 in the East. And then it's the Lakers and Clippers in the West. So I would say there's really 5. And okay, maybe you give like 2% to the rest of the league.
So I do think the Nets, I mean, it all depends. Like, obviously, Durant's frame is the question. Like, coming back from that serious of an injury, we haven't seen anyone sort of emulate what they were prior to the injury. But the style and frame of Durant gives me at least hope. And then modern medicine, where we are in 2020, as opposed to the previous kind of stars, all-stars that got suffered the same injury. Brian, are you hearing that he's, like, the same? Or is it going to still be, like, a version of himself?
I don't know, man.
Because he was like the best. I mean, many thought he was the best player in the NBA that year.
He looks pretty good to me, man. You know, the best player is a difficult conversation to have for various reasons, but looks pretty good to me.
I think because of that, you have to put the Nets in there, at least, you know.
I just don't look like, historically, if you do not have a top 10 defense, you are not a serious contender. I know there's been a few teams in recent years that have sort of squeezed in there with like top 13, 15. And if they have a top 12 defense, we'll have a different conversation. I don't think they're going to have a top 20 defense. So that's why I'm just a little hesitant. I think there's going to be nights, though, where they look like world beaters. I mean, when their offense is clicking, they're going to be awesome.
Yeah, they might put up like 130, 140 easily on a couple random nights. but it's going to be fun. But guys, I appreciate your taking the time. I know it's that time of the year. Both of you have demands of a family, so appreciate your finding time for this. And it was a lot of fun. I know our listeners appreciate it as well.
No problem.
Thanks, Doug.
All right, be well.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
All right, thanks. Special thanks, really, to Brian and Preston. Really fun deep dive. A lot of good information. Windhorse is full of good factoids and nuggets and reporting. He is so plugged in. That's another reason I always enjoy talking to him on this podcast or Daily Wager, even in my SportsCenter days. I can just re-tee him on anything. I can ask a follow-up question, and he's always got like another piece of information. It's so funny. I tend to abuse it sometimes, but I think we all benefit from that. So thanks to him. And it was good to have Preston share what his model has and
it was just good to be talking NBA. So as if we didn't have enough sports going on with bowl season underway, NFL obviously cranking up into the playoff stretch and into the postseason. Good to get NBA going on a nightly basis. It was, we also have college hoops. So thanks to everyone. It's holiday week, obviously. We're going to do obviously UFC's dark, so we're good there. The NFL, we're going to tape on Wednesday, and we're figuring out the college football. But definitely next week, we're going to have, as the bowls reach higher importance in the playoff and all that, we're definitely going to have podcast content next week. But it's a holiday week, so we'll be doing the NFL on Wednesday. And wishing everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and we'll continue to post fresh content. So thanks for rating, reviewing, downloading, subscribing, all that good stuff, and we'll catch you back here on the next one.